News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
8:06, 6 minutes after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5. Absolutely glorious Tuesday morning in Mobile, Alabama, all along the Gulf Coast. Looking good, feeling good. Got a great day ahead of us here, so make the most of it. Bring on our guest, Quinn Hillier?
I think it's a good time to bring on our Tuesday guest, Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com. Also writes for the Washington Examiner and has some books up on Amazon. Quinn, tell us about those and what's so interesting about your trilogy.
Mad Jim's Heretic, Mad Jim's Hero, and Mad Jim's Agonistes. It's a trilogy, originally one book. Satire and modern media, politics and religion all at the same time. Should be fun, funny, and a good read, but with some interesting underlying thoughts about it all.
Isn't that, aren't those all the subjects that you're told never to bring up at a holiday gathering?
You never bring up over the dinner table.
Yeah.
So you're not allowed to read these while you're eating dinner.
But you can read them on your own. I got you.
Quinn, have you ever had to write with broken ribs? Have you ever had any broken ribs?
I've never had broken ribs. I've had a bruised rib once, and that was bad enough. I just cannot believe that Drew Brees started the game with either two or three cracked ribs. Mm-hmm. He didn't know it, but he knew it was painful, and a sore shoulder. And then after having taken that unbelievably hard, but I thought clean hit, he broke two or three other ribs, punctured his lung, and still finished the half. Finished one touchdown drive and came back in and ran a 2-minute offense for another touchdown before halftime with a collapsed lung.
Mm. Yeah, that's...
I mean, people don't give credit to Brees enough, not just for everything else that he does, but just for his sheer toughness and leadership and competitiveness. And I just think the world of the guy. He's got to be in horrid pain right now, and I pray for a relatively painless recovery.
And we'll get into some political talk here in just a minute, but at 41 years old, you think he comes back? You think he comes back strong later this season?
I think this is Drew Brees. Drew Brees is not about to let his last year end like this. Assuming the Saints make the playoffs, he's definitely back for that. I would guess he'll probably be back in about 4 weeks.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm no doctor, but just everything I've been reading combined with what I know about Brees. Brees will probably want to be back in 2 weeks, and Peyton is probably going to be strong enough and decent enough and smart enough to say, no, Drew, give it another week or two after that.
You've been writing about the post-election here recently at WashingtonExaminer.com, and you say that the transition should begin from President Trump to Joe Biden. Why do you feel that way?
Look, what I'm saying is not that Trump should not pursue any legitimate claims he has in court, but that you can walk and chew gum at the same time. And it looks like he is lost. It is legally going to be very difficult for him to win, and it does no harm to anybody to start planning the transition in case he has lost. No harm at all. But it does do harm if you don't start doing transition planning. And I've outlined it in several ways. It's not just national security. But let me tell you, I did talk to the guy who ran the national, well, he was Homeland Security, and he was the Bush White House Homeland Security Advisor, and he and the Bush White House National Security Advisor co-ran the transition from Bush to Obama. So he knows what he's talking about. And his name's Ken Weinstein. He also was a finalist twice, one of the four finalists to run the FBI. And what he said is that for national security alone, but not only for national security, it's really important because if you start getting people read in early, there might be some bit of intelligence or something that if you only start in the last couple of weeks, you won't know that it's something that oh, hey, that showed up in November once and in December once, too. It doesn't jog your memory. You don't notice the pattern. Whereas if you start getting it early, you can start to see patterns, et cetera, and you can miss things that are really important as you take over if you haven't been briefed in. It's not just Biden that needs to be briefed in. It's Biden and his top people. And, again, there's no harm in doing it. Look, Joe Biden was entrusted with the top secrets of the entire nation for 8 years as vice president. He received the presidential daily brief. It's not going to hurt anything. There's no risk to reading him in, but there's a big risk to not reading him in. And, again, that's just national security. I'll stop there, but I could go on about what it means for other departments of government, too.
But do we honestly think that Biden is coming in completely in the dark in this? I mean, I've seen headlines that he and that his running mate, Harris, they're going to have a national security briefing today. So it seems, you know, with some more allegations of voter fraud and kind of letting the system play this out, however long that may take, it seems to me like this is just another reason for them to pounce on Trump. I don't feel that Biden is completely in the dark on what's going on.
No, it's not completely in the dark, but as I said, you give Biden and his top three or four people daily readings and little details. I mean, Biden knows about as much as anybody about all this stuff in general, but he doesn't know daily little specifics, and it's those little specifics that add up over time that you might otherwise miss. And again, that's just national security. Same thing, it's important for commerce, it's important for state, it's important now for health. I mean, my goodness, with the pandemic going on. Again, it doesn't hurt to read them in. This is not about Trump, it's not about Biden, it's about making sure that no matter who is in office, come January 20th, that they and their team are fully prepared for the American people. It's not about these politicians, it's about the people.
So Biden says he wants to unify. How does he unify with a country that two-thirds of one half, where doesn't even want to unify? What's up there?
Well, number one, he needs to completely set aside, for at least the first year or two, any of this radical divisive stuff. You know, court packing, out the window. Ending the filibuster, out the window. Taking up again the vendetta against the Little Sisters of the Poor, out the window. How does it do any good to fight the Little Sisters and say, we are going to put you out of business, meaning that the free housing you provide for impoverished elderly people will be shut down just because we say that you should participate in the provision of abortion-inducing drugs. How does that help anybody when any of their employees that wants that coverage can go and get that extra coverage on the exchange if they want it? All it is a power play. To answer your question, Biden needs to stop, you know, highly ideological power plays and find things that if everybody doesn't agree on them, that at least don't send people up into orbit.
Gotcha. He needs to walk into the office very much a moderator, right? Or a moderate, I guess you would say.
Yeah, look, he's liberal. He can push liberal policies. That's one thing. But totally divisive, radical stuff is what I'm saying. He needs to throw that out the door. He needs to tell Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you need to get in the back of the line with your radical stuff. We've got a country to unite. And look, we're going to push our tax hikes and we're going to push this and that the liberals like. But you don't get this divisive stuff.
Okay, Quinn, more with Quinn around the corner.
Yeah, we'll talk about some of the not moderate stuff they're reporting that Biden will do if and when he takes office. More on that with Quinn Hillier coming up.
Yeah. You can read his work and his opinions at quinnhillier.com and also the Washington Examiner. It's Quinn Hillier at 822 on FM Talk 106.5 with our normal Tuesday morning conversation.
And if you want to have fun with Quinn, follow him on Twitter at Quinn Hillier and tell him that the Saints get all the calls all the time. Quinn loves that.
That would not be true.
Immediate block. Well, it is National Unfriend Day, Quinn. We learned that earlier. So feel free to block whoever you want to today. So when we went into the break, we were talking about your article that says Joe Biden needs to act as a moderate. Well, how's this for moderation? Immediate student loan debt forgiveness. If some of the liberals have their way, that's what Joe Biden will do in his first days of office. What's your take on that, the potential of that happening?
Well, he says he can do it by executive order to get rid of up to $50,000 of everybody's student debt. Just as I said under Trump, I think that's an abuse of executive power. I don't see how he has the power to do that just by the stroke of a pen. But even assuming that he does, what does that mean for all the people that have already paid off their student loans? Does that mean that they've been suckers? You know, I mean, is he going to go back and give them $50,000 back? Is he going to, if you had a student loan, is he going to give you your $50,000 back? That's not fair. It doesn't make sense, and it encourages what's known as moral hazard. It means that it teaches people that you take on an obligation and somebody else is going to bail you out. That's not a good idea.
Well, the debt without the reform would be the crazy part, right? Because I think most people can agree that prices are outrageous for the value that you're getting for some of these degrees. I mean, you see the jokes out there about some of the outrageous things that people go to college and learn that are really not useful once they get out of their 4 to 15 years at our universities.
Right, So look, you need reform, but that's what legislation is for. That's why you have a legislative process. You bring in 535 people that have ideas about this stuff. You work it through the process. You find compromise. You get ideas from all around the country. You don't do something with the stroke of a pen that is patently unequal for, you know, comparing those who have paid to those who have basically just said, oh, I'm too poor, I'm going to walk away from this and hope somebody bails me out. That's not how you do things.
Some of the other executive orders, according to the Washington Post, that Biden plans to implement when he takes office, they said he plans to reverse the Trump administration's decision for these tight travel restrictions to some of the countries from the Middle East, also reinstate DACA, and rejoin the Paris Climate Accord. And with the news coming out, I think it was the New York Times that said there's talk about striking Iran from the president. It seems odd to me that that would come up right now, and it's the New York Times leaking that. Is that maybe potential that, and I know this is a loaded question, but I want to get your take on any of these potential executive orders.
There's a lot there.
That he might be rejoining, might be giving Iran that nuclear deal again.
Yeah, look, I wrote a whole column saying that, first of all, I've opposed overuse of executive orders and executive power for 30 years, no matter which party was in power. And I wrote a whole column just last week saying that Biden needs to really be careful about not abusing executive
authority. Yeah, I saw that,
across the board. But in particular, the one that's really got me is he says he's going to go 100 days and suspend all deportations of illegal aliens for 100 days. Now, wait a minute. Does that mean, okay, you have a criminal illegal alien, not just illegal having crossed into the country, but he's now been caught committing a crime. You're not going to deport him if he's not in American prison or something like that. You're not going to send him back. You're going to completely obliterate the laws of the country by the stroke of a pen for 100 days. That's insane, and it's totally abusive. He takes an oath that he will see that the laws be faithfully executed. Well, if he tries to suspend the laws on immigration for 100 days, that's not faithfully executing the laws.
What do you think comes of the wall? And it seems like Biden is being pressured to rewrite everything that Trump has done in these last 4 years and everything that Trump and his campaign have stood for. Do you think they'll go as far as tearing down portions of the wall that have been built over the last 4 years?
Oh, if he does that, he is asking for a major, major bit of blowback. Look, this whole opposition to the wall, or at least the parts of it that have already been built, is insane. Republicans and Democrats alike agreed that several hundred more miles of wall should be built. They agreed on that before Trump even started running for president in 2015. It was only when Trump made building the wall across the whole border an issue and made it a part of his stump speech that suddenly the left was against any expansion mm-hmm. of the wall.
Yeah.
That's a totally political position, and it's totally counterproductive. Walls work. Look at San Diego. That's one of the places where they did build a wall, and the amount of illegals crossing into San Diego after that went precipitously down.
So it's almost like, would it be almost comical? Democrats take the wall back down, and in 4 years, Republicans
right back
start
up.
Building it back up again, like kids on a beach with their sandcastles.
It seems like that's where we are at this point in the country. And just a couple minutes left here, Quinn, but I want you to talk about Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito. We spoke about this just a little bit yesterday, and his remarks at the Federalist Society, I think it was a Zoom thing he talked online. Talk a little bit about what Alito had to say with the government overstepping their bounds.
Got about 1 minute, Quinn.
Okay, well, the left is going apoplectic because they said that he made a partisan speech, a political speech. It was nothing of the sort. He talked about decisions and opinions he has already written that defend the First Amendment and Second Amendment, free speech, free exercise of religion, and free, and then use of firearms. And he said that all three of those are under assault and that the COVID has made it worse because of all the restrictions everybody's put on, and that he just wants people to start paying attention and to safeguard those rights. He was exactly within his right to say so.
And the left now calling for him to be reprimanded at the minimum.
Yeah. So,
a great article on that at WashingtonExaminer.com. How can people find your writings and follow you online, Quinn?
They can go every day, just Google my name, Quinn Hillier, Washington Examiner, or they can go to my website, QuinnHillier.com, and it gets updated about once a week, and you get it in your inbox for free. All you got to do is go to the little yellow button at the upper right and sign in for free.
Sounds great, Quinn. Thanks again for your time, and we'll talk to you in a week's time.
Thank you.
You got it. Drew Brees superfan Quinn Hillier on FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton, back with you. We're going to open up those phone lines and turn up your voice at 343-0106.
All right, 836 here on FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Let's talk with Louis Arata from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Louis.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, doing well. And, we're about midway through the month of November, but some great November deals ongoing in McConnell Automotive. Tell us about them.
That's right. I think the hot thing is now is, everybody's been talking about the new EV Hummer that's coming out with
you.
And that is gonna be one bad ride. And we're trying to see if we can get a few allocations of those in. We've got the used cars, we've got the new cars. I'll check those out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Don't forget, you want to get your little Christmas money, you got a car in the yard you want to get rid of, call Gene or I at 251-476-4141. Give us the VIN and the miles. We'll give you a price right over the telephone. Y'all can check, like I said, check all of our inventory out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. We've got great financing rates. We're going to be there all day. It's going to be a great day. Y'all come see us, Midtown Mobile on Dolphin Street.
And how much horsepower does my new Hummer have again?
1,000.
Yeah, that's the first
wave of them will have 1,000 horsepower. The second wave, I think, is going to be in the 700s. Which, if you're a NASCAR fan, they only have 500 horsepower. So just think about it.
Yeah, that's weak. You could run Logano off the road in that new Hummer.
That's right. I mean, you can run 200 at Talladega with 500 horsepower.
That's unbelievable. All right. We appreciate it, Louie.
Thank you.
That is Louis Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Dalton daydreaming for some reason of running Joey Logano into a wall.
Well, you know, if Biden gets rid of the student loan debt, that's my Hummer, that's my first payment on the Hummer right there.
That's pretty sweet right there. 838 FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, and few things on the desk here we're thinking about. Where are you going to go?
I want to talk about, you know, what happened in Georgia, which I think is pretty disconcerting.
We'll get to that.
Get to that in here in just a minute. But a story I really wanted to get to today, which I find interesting, as polling across America, and I know polling is a bad word right now for a lot of people, but marijuana has never been more popular for decriminalization and legalization than it is right now. And it looks like the U.S. House of Representatives expected to vote next month on legislation that would decriminalize marijuana nationwide. So we've heard of, you know, states decriminalizing marijuana, and decriminalizing is different than legalizing the use of marijuana medicinally or recreationally. But it's, as some would say, a sliding slope, I guess, towards legalizing marijuana.
Yeah, it'd be a whole lot easier to legalize it once you've decriminalized it.
That's right. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer from Maryland issued an update on the status of many House bills last week, and he expects a vote on that particular bill to come next month. It's called the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act of 2019, and we know how D.C. loves their acronyms, so that works out to the MORE Act, sponsored by Kamala Harris, Biden's running mate, also Jerry Nadler from New York, and I'm not sure if Nadler, he doesn't look like the guy that smokes much marijuana to me, but he's certainly trying to legalize it for his
Nadler
votes.
He doesn't look like a pothead?
No.
Pothead?
I don't know. Maybe he has to keep the munchies in order to keep those pants up on his belly the way he does. But under this bill, marijuana would be removed from the list of scheduled substances under the Controlled Substances Act, and criminal penalties for those who manufacture, distribute, or possess marijuana would be eliminated. It would also impose a 5% tax on cannabis products to be deposited into a trust fund, which would support various programs to communities impacted by the war on drugs. But it would also, and listen to this, it would expunge convictions related to federal cannabis offenses. So I don't know if that means if someone got arrested driving from California to Florida on I-10 and had tons and tons of marijuana loaded away in the back or underneath the vehicle,
which would look like he was going to distribute it, he was going to sell it, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if that would fall under that qualification, because it's two different things here. To talk about someone who was arrested with, you know, personal use amount of marijuana, and someone who was involved in a criminal cartel and distribution of marijuana.
Yeah.
This version of the bill has 118 co-sponsors in the House from both sides of the aisle. So we're seeing Republicans and Democrats start to line up behind the decriminalization of marijuana. And the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, has created a message form for those who support the bill to contact their local representatives. Now, with this past election, there were several states who had voted to enact marijuana reform. So, you know, the winds are a changing on many things, but in particular marijuana, as we've seen more and more states not only decriminalize it, but also legalize it for medicinal use and recreational use.
You think about what was considered okay, what was considered taboo 8 years ago. What was considered, so much of our morals, I guess you would say, are relaxing because we're trying to be all inclusive to everybody. And now, in terms of the behavior of what was in Oregon, they decriminalized heroin and cocaine,
heroin, and I think meth.
Good
and
night.
The joke's been around the internet. I think someone texted it to us yesterday. It's legal to use cocaine in Oregon, but illegal to use a plastic straw because of the environmental concerns.
Also, we've got Keith texting, Harris knows pot has a lot of support. I mean, she jailed thousands and kept them jailed longer because of it. You know, Harris was a district attorney, or she was the attorney general, I guess, of California.
Yeah.
And the drug laws were tough.
And if I don't know if you noticed, but that wasn't mentioned a whole lot over the last few months.
No.
It was talked about in the primaries when she was battling all these other Democrats. And was it Biden? Somebody tried to use against her in a debate. But once it came time for the general, that
Zip
narrative
it.
Completely went away.
No.
With how Harris had put away users of pot. Now, there's so many things that I've changed, you know, my opinion on over time.
Mm-hmm.
Some things that I thought were pretty clear cut in my brain years ago. And I think that's just pretty normal for your average human to change their mind as they.
But is a society changing like that?
Right.
That's the difference is now you got to watch what you say, because that was okay to say it 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's not okay now. That's sliding scale can be a little confusing if you're not keeping up with it, or if you just speak your mind, you're subject to get challenged, beyond challenged, kind of shut down, or what's the new term?
Canceled. Yeah, and so with the legalization of marijuana,
that's why I got into talk radio. So easy.
Yeah, very easy. So I can see both sides of the debate here, and medicinally, I think it should definitely. There, I mean, if you've seen videos online of people with seizures and some really, really critical diseases, and then you see them use medicinal marijuana and how it improves their lives, I don't know how that's not a slam dunk. And even here in Alabama, it's not a slam dunk by any means.
No, there was a congressman on with Jeff Port last week in the noon hour when he was filling in for Sean.
Mike Ball.
He was so passionate about how CBD and mm-hmm. and so he was talking about the medicinal uses of it and how it wasn't just like it's okay, give them the option. No, it really, really worked.
Right, but also where I think in my mind I've changed a little bit in this discussion is the legalization of recreational marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people can use marijuana, and just like having a glass of wine on a weeknight, or you know, just a couple beers on the weekend.
I saw it in Seattle.
There's people that can certainly do that.
It's legal there.
But as a community as a whole, would the legalization of recreational marijuana slow down the economy? Would it put more people behind? But then the argument on the other side is, what about alcohol? That's already doing it to a lot of people as well.
Yeah. Slow down. Was that a joke? This is going to slow down everything. Washington State would be a good test case, because
mm-hmm.
the smoke is rolling out
in
there.
The air.
Yep. FM Talk 106.5. Most of the texts online have got to do with me as a child throwing rocks at a moving train.
They're highly upset with you.
I would throw it at the boxcars.
Not the conductor?
No, I wouldn't throw it at a person. I mean, a train. All right. So a train. Think about when you're at a crossing and you're sitting there and you're waiting. How many people do you see? How many people do you see? If you didn't see the conductor first guy through, you haven't seen any people, right?
No. Yeah, you're
just
right.
Seeing all these boxcars.
Mm-hmm.
They are known as inanimate objects.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just, man, you toss a rock at a boxcar. That was part of my life growing up, so I don't understand.
Does anyone hop trains anymore, like just, you know, for a ride across the country?
I think they do.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I love that. Great movie. I would think that people still, that would be their, not their choice of transportation, but they might be down to that. And I would think that people who know how to, why are so many encampments near train tracks?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Maybe because train tracks are off the beaten path, or maybe because the guy just came in from Philly. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't live in that world.
Mm.
I would say that that there are still skilled train hoppers out there. There's not a whole lot to it.
And there's a bunch of rocks around train tracks, too, because of hoodlums like you throwing them at the train.
There's a bunch of rocks around there because that's how they, I guess, maintain the tracks. They've got the rocks around, and the rocks are there for a child like me at that time to whip them at that at the boxcar.
We were talking about cannabis, as Dan says here, which cannabis, I kept using the word marijuana there. Cannabis, I guess that would include, you know, hemp, and CBD, all the different offshoots of the marijuana leaf.
So right.
When they're talking about decriminalizing marijuana here, they're talking about decriminalizing the use of THC marijuana. But he said really this high. This shift culturally has been happening from the ground up since the early 2000s. And Dan asks, are educational institutions and media outlets, he said that's where they started, and then social media threw it into overdrive. I agree. I think social media has hastened the shift culturally for a lot of things, not just with marijuana, but there's so, and I think politicians get wrapped up in this, but also the media too. With social media, it's actually such a small percentage of people that are tweeting every day and tweeting their thoughts out loud that I think even I and a lot of people will start to think that's what the national tone is what people are saying on social media.
That is a very good point.
And I don't think
we may be misreading the whole tone.
Yeah,
right?
But Facebook might be a bit of a different story here, because I think there's a whole lot more users on Facebook, and a lot of people upset with how Facebook and Twitter have acted over these last couple of months. I mean, you go to President Trump's Twitter account, and every single thing is flagged right now that he's saying. And I never thought it would come to that with the president mm-hmm. being, you know, called out for every single thing he says. But it's a business. What are you going to do? Even though there's so many Americans that are on Facebook and on Twitter, technically it's their right to do what they want with their website. And that's the big argument that's coming up. But I think the cultural shift on ideas surrounding the use of weed has been hastened by Twitter in a big way.
I think you're right. It was shocking to me in Washington State a couple of years ago that I got off the plane, and just as a shock effect, my brother, who lives out there, who's a little bit crazy, mm-hmm. he hands me a joint.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you doing, man? And he's like, hey, it's legal. But he was doing it more for show than anything. But it just shows what I was programmed to think about what a marijuana joint mm-hmm. meant, which I'm not a big fan of the use of it, and doesn't float my boat. But right away, it was like, get away from me, put that away. And he was like, no, this is legal, and yeah. it takes an adjusting to.
Yeah, it sure does. Some more texts we're getting here. Tim said, I am really disappointed in Trump. How he let them beat him. He had to know it was going to be a close election, and it didn't take much funny business from the Dems to steal the election. And, you know, that's the question now. There's all kinds of allegations of voter fraud and so many videos up on the internet of different things that you know, point towards voter fraud, or at least some wild things that appeared to have gone on going into the election. And I think it was Jeff Poore after the election. Hopefully I'm not wrong on this, that said, you know, the Trump campaign, they should have been looking into a lot of this before the election.
It absolutely was, Jeff. He made a great point about it. I mean, immediately after the election, he was like, hey, man, how about your pregame meeting? This never came up?
Yeah, because as obvious as so much of this voter fraud looks, you know, to the normal person, it has to be provable in court. And that's the big question now, is can Trump's legal teams prove that all of this voter fraud happened? I mean, the story surrounding this Dominion, these voting systems, and why Texas decided not to use them,
right,
because they felt that they were easily hackable.
Mm-hmm.
And so how can one state say, that's not up to snuff, we don't want to do that, and then, what was it, 29 other states say, okay, yeah, sure, we'll pay hundreds of millions of dollars.
United States of America, you know, again, the states having the jurisdiction over their own voting machines. Mm-hmm. And Jeff also talks about that you don't want to give too much of all of this back to the federal government. You know, you need to stay independent of that. But it is interesting that some states were like, we're not using that program, and,
right,
and others were like, it's fine with me.
And it sounds like it's going to be very difficult for them to prove if votes were stolen from the Dominion systems. There is a big hearing today in Pennsylvania for one of the Trump campaign's main lawsuits that they filed here. So we'll hear more about that later in the day as that hearing is held. But, you know, Giuliani over the weekend, he said they would be providing evidence this week that there was massive amounts of voter fraud. I don't know this week if he meant Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. But
hadn't happened yet.
You have to think that they, according to him, would have something coming out here in the next few days.
How about the county commissioner's race out in Nevada, in Clark County, Nevada, that you know, that wasn't the presidential race, but the county commissioner's race is jumbled up with some sort of a mess. Some sort of corruption went down there. 10 votes separating the two candidates?
Yeah, so County Commissioner District C in Clark County, Nevada, there was a 10-vote difference between the Democrat and the Republican. And the registrar out there of voters, Joe Gloria, said they found discrepancies, in particular 139 discrepancies, including six people who voted twice. So the president was tweeting about this yesterday. He said, big victory moments ago in the state of Nevada. The all-Democrat county commissioner race on the same ballot as president just thrown out because of large-scale voter discrepancy. Clark County officials do not have confidence in their own election security. Major impact. And so, but that is the only race in the election that they're going to take a second look at, and because of the 10 votes that separate the two candidates there. But, conservatives, supporters of the president are saying, well, if you found voter fraud in that race, mm-hmm. and Nevada was one of these battleground states that came down to the very end, then why aren't you taking a second look at the presidential election,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, understood. 858 FM Talk 106.5. I guess Mr. Jeffrey Poor is on the way next.
Yeah, he's got a big show planned for today. Dan Gaynor from Media Research Center, Andy Witt, Congressman, Phil Williams from the Alabama Policy Institute, and Dick Brubaker, former state senator, all joining Jeff on today's show.
A lot of smart people. 859 at FM Talk 106.5.